We're continuing chapter 24 of Harry Potter and the Half-Blood Prince. So if you remember that he just did his, the Sectum Sempra spell against Draco, Snape found out, and then Snape demanded that Harry go fetch his books, because he used some, whatever that's called, occlumency against him. He felt stunned. It was as though a beloved pet had suddenly turned savage. What had the prince been thinking to copy such a spell into his book? And what would happen when Snape saw it? Would he tell Slughorn? Harry's stomach churned. How Harry had been achieving good results in potions all year? Would he confiscate or destroy the book that had taught Harry so much, the book that had become a guide and a friend? Harry could not let it happen. He could not. Where have you... Why are you soaking? Is that blood? Ron was standing at the top of the stairs, looking bewildered at the sight of Harry. I need your book, Harry panted. Your potions book. Quick, give it to me. But what about the half-blood? I'll explain later. Ron pulled his copy of Advanced Potion Making out of his bag and handed it over. Harry sprinted off past him and back into the common room. Here, he seized his school bag, ignoring the amazed looks of several people who had already finished their dinner, and threw himself back along, out of the portrait hall, hurtled off along the 7th floor corridor. He skidded to a halt beside the tapestry of dancing trolls, closed his eyes, and began to walk. I need a place to hide my book. I need a place to hide my book. I need a place to hide my book. 3 times he walked up and down in front of the stretch of blank wall. When he opened his eyes, there it was at last. The door to the room of requirement. Harry wrenched it open, flung himself inside, and slammed it shut. He gasped. Despite his haste, his panic, his fear of what awaited him back in the bathroom, he could not help but be overawed by what he was looking at. He was standing in a room the size of a large cathedral whose high windows were sending shafts of light down upon what looked like a city with towering walls, built of what Harry knew must be objects hidden by generations of Hogwarts inhabitants. There were alleyways and roads bordered on teetering piles of broken and undamaged furniture, stowed away perhaps to hide the evidence of mishandled magic, or else hidden by castle-proud house elves. There were thousands upon thousands of books no doubt banned or graffitied or stolen. There were winged catapults and fanged frisbees, some still with enough life in them to hover half-heartedly over the mountains of other forbidden items. There were chipped bottles of congealed potions, hats, jewels, cloaks. There were what looked like dragon eggshells, corked bottles whose contents were still shimmered evilly, several rusting swords, and a heavy blood-stained axe. Harry hurried forward in one of the many alleyways between all this hidden treasure. He turned right past an enormous stuffed troll, ran a short way, took a left at the broken vanishing cabinet in which Montague had got lost the previous year, finally paused beside a large cupboard seemed to have had acid thrown at its blistered surface. He opened one of the cupboard's creaking doors. It had already been used as a hiding place for something in its cage that had long since died. Its skeleton had 5 legs. He stuffed the half-blood prince's book behind the cage and slammed the door. He paused for a moment, his heart thumping horribly, gazing around at all the clutter. Would he be able to find this spot again amidst all this junk? Seizing the chipped bust of an ugly old warlock from the top of a nearby crate, he stood it on top of the cupboard where the book was now hidden, perched a dusty old wig and a tarnished tiara on the statue's head to make it more distinctive. Is that what I think it is?
And the vanishing cabinet is what Draco has been working on.
Then sprinted back through the alleyways of hidden junk as fast as he could go, back to the door, back out of the corridor, where he slammed the door behind him and it turned at once back into stone. Harry ran flat out toward the bathroom on the floor below, cramming Ron's copy of Advanced Potion Making into his bag as he did so. I think I know how Snape's going to react. A minute later, he was back in front of Snape, who held his hand wordlessly for Harry's school bag. Harry handed it over, panting, a searing pain at his chest, and waited. One by one, Snape extracted Harry's books and examined them. Finally, the only book left was the potions book, which he looked at very carefully before speaking. This is your copy of Advanced Potion Making, is it, Potter? Yes, said Harry, still breathing hard. Are you quite sure of it, are you, Potter? Yes, said Harry with a touch more confidence. Is this the copy of Advanced Potion Making that you purchased from Flourish and Blotts? Yes, said Harry firmly. Then why, asked Snape, does it have the name Runo Waslim written on the front cover? Harry's heart skipped a beat. That's my nickname, he said. Your nickname, repeated Snape. Yeah, that's what my friends call me, said Harry. I understand what a nickname is, said Snape. The cold black eyes were boring into Harry's once more. He tried not to look into them. Close your mind, close your mind. But he had never learned how to do it properly. Do you know what I think, Potter? Said Snape very quietly. I think you are a liar and a cheat, and that you deserve detention with me every Saturday until the end of term. What do you think, Potter? I don't agree, sir, said Harry, still refusing to look into Harry's eyes. Well, we shall, refusing to look into Snape's eyes. Well, we shall see how you feel after your detention, said Snape. 10 o'clock Saturday morning, Potter, my office. But, sir, said Harry, looking up desperately. Quidditch, the last match of 10 o'clock, whispered Snape, with a smile that showed his yellow teeth. Poor Gryffindor. 4th place, I fear, this year. And he left the bathroom without another word, leaving Harry to stare to the cracked mirror, feeling sicker, he was sure, than Ron had ever felt in his life. I won't say I told you so, said Hermione an hour later in the common room. Leave it, Hermione, said Ron angrily. Harry had never made it to dinner. He had no appetite at all. He had just finished telling Ron, Hermione, and Ginny what had happened. Not that there seemed to have been much need. The news apparently traveled very fast. Apparently, Moaning Myrtle had taken it upon herself to pop up in every bathroom in the castle to tell the story. Malfoy had already been visited in the hospital wing by Pansy Parkinson, who had lost no time in vilifying Harry far and wide, and Snape had told the staff precisely what had happened. Harry had already been called out of the common room to endure 15 highly unpleasant minutes in the company of Professor McGonagall, who told him he was lucky not to have been expelled and that she supported wholeheartedly Snape's punishment of detention every Saturday until the end of term. I told you there was something wrong with the prince person, Hermione said, evidently unable to stop herself. And I was right, wasn't I? No, I don't think you were, said Harry stubbornly. He was having a bad enough time without Hermione lecturing him. The looks on the Gryffindor team's faces when he told them he would not be able to play on Saturday had been the worst punishment of all. He could feel Ginny's eyes on him now, but he did not meet them. He did not want to see disappointment or anger there. He just told her that she would be playing Seeker on Saturday and that Dean would be rejoining the team as Chaser in her place. Perhaps if they won, Ginny and Dean would make up during post-match euphoria. The thought went through Harry like an icy knife. Harry, said Hermione, how can you still stick up for a book when that spell? Will you stop harping on the book, snapped Harry. The prince only copied it out. It's not like he was advising anyone to use it. For all we know, he was making a note of something that had been used against him. I don't believe this, Hermione said. You're actually defending. I'm not defending what I did, said Harry quickly. I wish I hadn't done it, and not just because I've got about a dozen detentions. You know I wouldn't have used a spell like that, not even on Malfoy, and you can't blame the prince. He hadn't written, try this out, it's really good. He was just making notes for himself, wasn't he? Not for anyone else. Are you telling me, said Hermione, that you're going back to get the book? Yeah, I am, said Harry forcefully. Listen, without the prince, I'd never have won Felix Felicis. I'd never have known how to save Ron from poisoning. I'd never have gotten the reputation for potions brilliance you don't deserve, said Hermione nastily. Give it a rest, Hermione, said Ginny, and Harry was so amazed, so grateful, he looked up. By the sound of it, Malfoy was trying to use an unforgivable curse, and he should be glad Harry had something good up his sleeve.
Yeah, Jenny.
Well, of course I'm glad Harry wasn't cursed, said Hermione, clearly stung. But you can't call that Sectum Semper spell good, Ginny. Look at what here it's landed in. And I'd have thought, seeing as what this has done to your chances in the match. Oh, don't start acting as though you understand Quidditch, snapped Ginny. You only embarrass yourself.
Whoa.
Harry and Ron stared. Hermione and Ginny, who had always gotten along well together, were now sitting with their arms folded, glaring in opposite directions. Ron looked nervously at Harry, then snatched up a
That's
broom.
That's how I would react if someone was being rude to you.
I know. Sweetest. Check that, you're as sweet as you need to be. Ron looked nervously at Harry and snatched up a book at random and hid behind it. Harry, however, little though he knew he deserved it, felt unbelievably cheerful all of a sudden, even though none of them spoke again for the rest of the evening. His lightheartedness was short-lived. There were Slytherin taunts to be endured next day, not to mention much anger from fellow Gryffindors, who were the most unhappy that their captain got himself banned from the final match of the season. By Saturday morning, whatever he might have told Hermione, Harry would gladly have exchanged all of the Felix Felicis in the world to be walking down to the Quidditch pitch with Ginny, Ron, and the others. It was almost unbearable to turn away from the mass of students streaming out into the sunshine, all of them wearing rosettes and hats and brandishing banners and scarves, to descend the stone steps into the dungeons and walk until the distant sounds of the crowd were quite obliterated, knowing that he would not be able to hear a word of commentary or a cheer or a groan. Potter, said Snape when Harry had knocked on his door and entered the unpleasantly familiar office that Snape, despite teaching floors above now, had not vacated. It was as dimly lit as ever. Okay. And the same slimy dead objects were suspended in colored potions around all the walls. Ominously, there were many cobweb boxes piled on top of a table where Harry was clearly supposed to sit. They had an aura of tedious, hard, and pointless work about them. Mr. Filch has been looking for someone to clear out these old files, said Snape softly. They are the records of other Hogwarts wrongdoers and their punishments. When the ink has grown faint or the cards suffered from damage from mice, we would like you to copy out the crimes and punishments afresh and making sure they are in alphabetical order, replace them in the boxes. You will not use magic. Right, Professor, said Harry with as much contempt as he could put into the last three syllables. I thought you could start, said Snape, a malicious smile on his lips. With boxes 1012 to 1056, you will find some familiar names in there, which should add interest to the task. Here, you see, he pulled out a card from one of the topmost boxes with a flourish and read, James Potter and Sirius Black, apprehended using an illegal hex upon Bertram Aubrey. Aubrey's head twice normal size, double detention. Snape sneered. It must be such a comfort to think that, though they are gone, a record of their great achievements remains. Harry felt the familiar boiling sensation in the pit of his stomach. Biting his tongue to prevent himself from retaliating, he sat down in front of the boxes and pulled one toward him. It was, as Harry had anticipated, useless, boring work, punctuated, as Snape had clearly planned, with a regular jolt in the stomach that meant he had just read his father or Sirius's names, usually coupled together in various petty misdeeds, occasionally accompanied by those of Remus Lupin and Peter Pettigrew. And while he copied out all the various different offenses and punishments, he wondered what was going on outside, where the match would have just started, Ginny playing Seeker against Cho. Harry glanced again and again at the large clock ticking on the wall. It seemed to be moving half as fast as a regular clock. Perhaps Snape had bewitched it to go extra slowly. He could not have been here for only a half an hour. Only an hour and a half. Harry's stomach started rumbling when the clock showed 12:30. Snape, who had not spoken at all since setting Harry to this task, finally looked up at 1:10. I think that will do, he said coldly. Mark the place you have reached. It will continue at 10:00 next Saturday. Yes, sir. Harry stuffed a bent card into the box at random and hurried out the door before Snape could change his mind, racing back up the stone steps, straining his ears to hear a sound from the pitch, but it was all quiet. It was over then. He hesitated outside the crowded great hall and then ran up the marble staircase. Whether Gryffindor had won or lost, the team usually celebrated or commiserated in their own common room. Quid agis? He said tentatively to the fat lady, wondering whether what he would find inside. Her expression was unreadable as she replied, "You'll see." And she swung forward. A roar of celebration erupted from the hall behind her. Harry gaped as people began to scream at the sight of him. Several hands pulled him into the room. "We won," yelled Ron, bounding into sight and brandishing the silver cup at Harry. "We won 450 to 140. We won." Harry looked around, and there was Ginny running toward him. She had a hard, blazing look in her face as she threw her arms around him.
Aww.
And without thinking, without planning it, without worrying about the fact that 50 people were watching, Harry kissed her. After several long moments, or might have been half an hour, possibly several sunlit days, they broke apart. The room had gone very quiet. Then several people wolf whistled, and there was an outbreak of nervous giggling. Harry looked over the top of Ginny's head to see Dean Thomas holding shattered glass in his hand, and Romilda Vane looking as though she might throw something. Hermione was beaming, but Harry's eyes sought Ron. At last he found him still clutching the cup and wearing an expression appropriate to having been clubbed over the head. For a fraction of a second, they looked at each other, and Ron gave a tiny jerk of the head that Harry understood to mean, "Well, if you must." The creature in his chest roaring in triumph, he grinned down at Ginny and gestured wordlessly out of the portrait hall. A long walk on the ground seemed indicated, during which, if they had time, they might discuss the match. And that's the end of chapter 24. Chapter 25 is called The Seer Overhead. And I take it that you liked that chapter.
Yeah.
Like the end of that chapter.
The end.
So, Harry and Ginny finally got together. I hope you like that, my beautiful kitten. It's bedtime now. Sweet dreams.